Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everybody Gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by our premier Starfinder from... Let me go back on that. Sorry. Twitch started blaring my voice in my ear and threw me off. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your home for Starfinder news, reviews... Oh, God, I'm off now. I've destroyed it, James.
Hi, I'm James. I used to write Code Switch. And no.
Don't make me step in there, Agunis.
No, oh God, disembodied voice of our producer. All right, I'll try it again. Last time. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everybody Gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
Hi, I used to write Code Switch.
And today we have a super special show that I swear didn't take me three alternate realities to bring you this take. Today we have a special show on the upcoming Starfinder book, Tech Revolution. And to tell us all about it, we have the lead designer for this book. Welcome, John.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
Excellent. So, John, give us the sales pitch on this book. This book is coming out in like a month and a half or so now, right? I think it got pushed back to September?
Toward the end of August.
Okay, towards the end of August, right. So early September. Give us the sales pitch. We've heard this before. I believe you were the one who came on to tell us about the nanosite, right? Am I
that
crazy?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think so.
Tech Revolution is a Starfinder book that expands on and explains all sorts of aspects of technology in the Starfinder setting and in the Starfinder game. So it does several major things just from the 10,000 mile view. First off, it is adding a new class, which we'll get to soon enough. It is adding several big, heavy ways to use technology, like expanded vehicle rules and uses of mechs. So if you want to go and stomp on things, a giant battle robot, that's totally an option. Mm-hmm. Of course, any technological book is going to include a whole bunch of new gear, technologically themed, of course. And every one of our books that we produce is a combination of rules as well as setting and story building. And so there's a whole chapter dedicated to expanding on what the state of technology is across the galaxy, especially in the Pact worlds. So all the questions of like, where does energy come from? Or like, I don't know, it's like, there's shipping in this galaxy, right? Previously, Starfinder had been like, sure, hand wave it. And now this is less of a time to wave hands than it is to hold your hand and bring you into the setting to explain some of the vast potential and story possibilities that are tied into the setting's state of technology.
Is it like switched between different places? Because I know we just had Joe on for Gem in our last episode last month. And one of the things he told us about was that there was this awesome section in the tech part of that book that that broke down like different technological levels and ages. Does the book go into all of them, or is it focused on like the Pact worlds? How does that look?
It's focused on sort of Pact worlds contemporaneous level technology. It explores a little bit of things that are a little bit more advanced or inaccessible to the Pact worlds, mm-hmm. and explores a little bit that is of a prior generation's technology as well. We have, for example, a sub-article in there about obsolete technology. Ooh. So the equivalent of us in the real world looking at a like a pager or a fax machine or a record player, and like giving the context of like when you're off on an adventure and you find the equivalent of like a beta video player, what sorts of things would those be? So it explores like some of the development of technology as well.
That's cool. I was going to say, like, if you're giving me a chapter on digital age technology, I can learn about that by going to the mall and heading to Radio Shack or whatever.
Oh, sweet summer child.
Radio Shack. where are those? Listen, obsolete tech.
fair. So you mentioned that this book, in addition to having this amazing chapter on setting building, it also has a new class, and I'm assuming class options for the other existing classes. We know a bit about that new class since I believe you were the one who delivered us the silver platter upon which the nanosite like rested. Do you care to tell us anything new about the nanosite that we haven't heard already?
Yeah, so first off, nanosite we play tested 8 months ago or so. It's been time is an illusion at this point. And so we solicited survey responses and feedback of your playtest experience and incorporated that into the final design. There are lots of little small changes throughout that are tweaking things here and there. The really big one that I think is most relevant to most people is that we changed up how the gear aspect works out. So as a quick primer, the Nanocyte is a character who houses a colony of friendly nanites in their body and can expel them out and turn them into either like an angry cloud that harasses your enemies. You can use them to reinforce your body in what's called the sheath array, or you can turn them into gear. You can be like, nanites, make me a crowbar. Nanites, make me a gun. You don't have to like go gadget it every time. That's a matter of personal flavor. But one of the issues in the playtest was that it was very complex figuring out what you could or could not acquire as gear and what it cost you. And that was especially true if you were building a nanocyte who was not first level. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to build a 10th level nanocyte, you had to do some kind of funky gymnastics to get there, because we were trying to balance out like what advantages is the class giving you and how is that interacting with our character wealth assumptions. But what we ended up doing to change things up is basically you have access to the several things that are your forms, and you can create those at will. You don't really have to invest things into it. And if you are building a higher level nanocyte just from the ground up, so if we want to run Devastation Arc right now and build like 13th level characters, all you do is you say, hey, look, level 13, I get 6 major forms. One of them is my level, and each one is one level lower than that. So 13, 12, 11, etc. End of story. You don't have to worry about the cost of those items. You just grab one of each sequentially lower level and call it a day. So much simpler to build and track what it is that you can or cannot use.
That's very exciting, because I had a friend in my Teenage Wasteland home game who wanted to play the Nanocyte, and he started trying to read that, and his eyes just kind of rolled back in his head. He's like, I'll just make another mechanic. And so it's nice to hear that problem has been addressed.
Yeah, and that's like, first off, that is partly a matter of what happens when I design things, is I err toward complexity and then have colleagues who will bring me back from the complexity cliff. But it's also partly a matter of just the theme of the class. Nanites are very much the hand wave magic of sci-fi, where it's like, what can nanites do? Anything. Yeah. So like, what do we expect a nanite class to do? Everything. So there's a lot of push and pull of versatility and complexity, but making it approachable nonetheless, not the easiest task.
Definitely not. Actually, I kind of want to try these command words you're talking about getting these nanites like to assemble into items. Can I give it a shot?
Yeah.
All right. Producer, make me a gun. I wonder if it worked. I don't think there are any nanites out yet.
I don't think you're a gun.
No, yeah, I'm not a gun.
I mean, perhaps what you need is you just need the right inspiration. And with the right artwork, you can envision what exactly it means to have a nanite, or nanocyte that is, create some sort of object out of thin air or out of their nanites. I understand that we have a certain amount of art that we were sent over that we can
show. Yeah, and there it is. He did it. My nanites have made me a gun. It's currently on screen from all of our people watching us live. We got this awesome art of a Yosoki nanocyte who is building a gun right into his hands.
Yeah, and when we were in the very planning stages of the nanocyte, I was like, okay, so we can have this mechanic and this mechanic and this mechanic. And we're all like, okay, yeah, this sounds fun. And then Sarah Robinson, our art director, who's in that meeting and many of our Starfinder creative meetings, was like, so what does a nanocyte look like? And we're like, yeah, oh, heavens. And we had very little sense at first. But the more that we worked with our art team and artists, the more we figured out this sort of look of like, this flow of sparkling particles that are flowing out of your body. And like, it is hard as heck in art to capture the moment of like part way constructed stuff. Oh, but our artists have done a good job of adapting to that curveball that we've thrown them. So yeah, this Yosoki is manifesting a gear gun, and like, it's all flowing out of the body and just about there.
Talk about having a gun in the blood or whatever. So we have some questions from chat. Care to answer some?
Yeah, yeah.
Starting, of course, there's a conversation going on that's saying bees to me, referring to the nanites, flying out of the body. Raising Rude Lords asks, is Tech Revolution going to talk more about hologram and or hard light technology? Will there be a hard hologram and or hard light character graphs for bringing characters back to life pseudo-ly? Okay.
Those would be fun things to explore. Tech Revolution only explores little bits of that, primarily like hologram technology, across a couple of its articles. Especially there's an article in the back about like virtual intelligences. But as far as creating characters who are hard light holograms, not yet, but maybe in the future.
We got a couple people who are saying that the class, the Nanocyte, sounds like the Artificer from 5e plus the Summoner from Pathfinder as one superclass. Someone is comparing it to a technological Solarian. Any of those hold any water?
Technological Solarian, I think, is probably a little bit more accurate because the Nanocyte is never really creating permanent things. Like, they aren't doing the equivalent of rune scribing or enhancing existing equipment so much as they are saying, I need this sword right now. Blech. Okay, here we go. Okay, now I need you to go be a cloud. Blech. Sword discorporates. And that's kind of like how Solarian has their solar weapon or solar shield, armor, etc. The Nanocyte is playing a lot more with our existing gear lists. So you are always drawing your weapons from like the weapons anybody else would buy. And you're drawing your like minor forms, your tools, from the list of tools that anybody could buy. And the idea of being able to perform these kind of adjacent to supernatural effects here and there at bursts very much maps to some of what we expect from the Solarian, but definitely with a much more technological flair.
That's fair. A couple people are asking about multi-classing Nanocyte. I guess that some people just don't want to wait till their next character. They want their technological nanites in their body now. How dippable will the dippable Nanocyte be? For all of these who are listening, I just put my fingers up in quotes around the word dippable, which is why James is laughing at me. How dippable will the Nanocyte be? And I guess a couple of people are asking whether or not they're going to be like graphs, like for the monster arrays in this book, or is that more of an Alien Archive kind of thing?
Yeah, so it is fairly dippable. I think those who multi-class the Nanocyte are likely going to get the most mileage out of the not gear forms, so where they're using the sheath or the cloud arrays, because the gear is based, like what things you can create is based on your Nanocyte level. So if you're a level 10 soldier, Nanocyte 1, you're going to learn how to create level 1 gear, which might not be as appealing to somebody at 11th level. But the other arrays are going to treat you just fine, because they're just providing these flat bonus or flat effects that are fairly level agnostic. As far as the grafts and the archetype information, both of those appear as part of the introduction, in fact. So as we explore all sorts of different types of books, like we have Galactic Magic coming up after this, we want to make sure that it is clear how to use these new classes in a variety of contexts, and that includes class grafts, as soon as possible. So why wait until the next big creature book when we could just give it to you right now?
That's true. As for something you can give to us right now, so we got this cool art of this Yosoki, but I noticed on the cover, which is in the splash image for our show today, the Yosoki on the cover appears to be Quill, right? Quinn is the investigator. Quig, there we go.
Yeah, we gave him a rocket launcher.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. If there's ever one thing that I wanted in Starfinder, it's a rat with a bazooka. That gives me the Guardians of the Galaxy vibe I've dreamed of. But like, I noticed that it's Quig and it's the iconic envoy. And then there's like a new character who seems to be an Ij Tikri in the back. Is that our iconic?
That is in fact our iconic. Our iconic is an Ij Tikri named Drakia, who we'll be revealing more of in an upcoming blog fiction with a Meet the Iconic. Also another follow-up fiction to that, more illustrating her abilities in narrative. So yeah, there's pretty much all of our iconics thus far have been the core species that we have in the core rulebook, with a little bit of initial consideration of whether or not we wanted to do some legacy species as well. And on one hand, it's like, hey, look, these are the characters that are front and center to any new player, and they can be like, oh, okay, I know exactly where to find these to build them. But on the other hand, Starfinder at this point has like 110 or so playable species. So some of them get weird. Some of them get real weird. Like our in the pre-show, we were joking about like a Kool-Aid Stellifera. You know, these get strange. And so one of the things that I have long wanted to do, especially with our iconics, is show, not just tell people, that you can play really weird characters. And so I was very vocal about having a non-anthropomorphic iconic who could really illustrate this. And so we've gone with the Ishtikri, which are the so-called stone-faced squids of Vesk 2. Mm-hmm. And Verkia has some exciting motivations that we'll be exploring soon enough. She's an absolute delight. And the art of her is really fun, because once you have an Ishtikri with, like, you know, 8 to 10 different limbs, who is summoning nanites into a cloud and like manifesting things in each different arm, you get some weird illustrations and moments. We have a fair number of art pieces that have been ordered where she is actively grabbing somebody while also doing nanite tricks. And so I had to provide some art feedback to our art team of like, here is exactly how longish Tikri tentacles are when it comes to grappling a medium-sized creature or a large creature, etc.
That's funny. But I really appreciate that. That's going to be a lot of fun, and you're getting a lot of hype in chat today about having a non-core iconic. So I think you've done good. I think.
And one of the things you might notice also is I think it was maybe 2 months ago or so that Starfinder Society recently opened up several new playable species. Among them, I think Ishtikri is one of those. Mm-hmm. That way, if you want to just build your own version of her, you totally could.
That is really cool. I think that one thing that makes a lot of sense with picking an Ishtikri is that, like, nobody ever says this species is core in the Vescarium, but they're listed as one of the most populous and major sapient species on one of their like worlds. So it's like the kind of core in the Vescarium. So if you're going to pick aliens, like, that makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. Speaking of things that make a lot of sense to me, you know, if you're going to add a new class, you're going to want to add lots of new toys for other classes too. Am I right? Can you tell us a little bit about how this tech revolution is going to revolutionize characters, especially those that you might not like associate with gear? Like, you know, I don't know about you, but like, unless we're talking about a Mystic of Triune who's replacing her lower half of her body with those like X-Walker legs, I don't really think of Mystics being that sounds super specific. That's because we basically got to that point in our Dead Sons campaign, James and I.
Good stuff. Yeah. So with Tech Revolution, one of the directives as we were creating the outline was, let's make a technological spin on every single one of the classes, or give a really strong option or multiple options to each one of them. So every one of the existing classes gets a full 2-page spread of new options, like alternate class features or major paths, like you'd expect a mystic connection or a fighting style for a soldier, stuff like that. So like the mystic, for example, gets a thing called Glitch Ghost connection, which is a connection about basically possessing technology. It's not about like being a technomancer and being like, I know how this works, I'm so good at computers. It's like magic. It's no, I literally like mentally dominate your computer. it will follow my commands, mysticism, that sort of thing. But also this has been an opportunity to say, like, what if we took these classes that kind of, as you were getting at, like, don't have a strong gear connection, but we gave them a gear connection. So like one of my favorite pieces of art in this book is for our envoy spread, where we have a new alternate class feature called Signature Gear, which says, instead of being about your own force of personality, your envoy abilities are channeled through a signature piece of gear that like is as iconic as you are. So this is almost like the equivalent of like Indiana Jones's whip or hat sort of thing, where your abilities vary depending upon what you choose as your category of signature gear. So if you choose apparel, it's one thing. If you choose a weapon, it's a different thing, armor, etc. But what you do is like your improvisations end up getting channeled through there and tweaked in various ways that are just fun. And it has delightful art.
That sounds pretty cool.
I think a couple of the ones that I may have mentioned on some previous streams or interviews, like maybe at PaizoCon or on Paizo Live, we have like the Witch Warper has been dying for alternate class features. So like alternate tech is one that we have for them, or infinite tech, sorry, is one we have for them, where instead of creating alternate reality environments with infinite worlds, they are reaching into an alternate reality and pulling out some device that they can temporarily use by sacrificing one of their spell slots. So you can be like, I need a cool gun that shoots acid. Well, let's reach into the acid universe. You got it. Or I sure do need a hacker's kit. And you're like, hang on. So that is a possibility. I also think that I've mentioned before that the Solarian has an alternate form of stellar attunement, where instead of being photon graviton, they are electrical, where they get energy and resistance as their duality, and their abilities can change up based on that. All of that is also backwards compatible. So like, if you see stellar revelations that you like from other books, you can grab those even with this Solarian variant. But also there are a couple of new ones that we have not explored as much. When it came to mapping out Tech Revolution and Galactic Magic as well, for both books, I was looking at various styles of play or vacancies or concepts that classes said they were good at that we didn't have as much support for. And so for the operative, for example, we have a slightly less mobile alternate class feature that changes up your trick attack so that it works specifically with sniper weapons right from the get-go. So we do have a sniper variant of the operative. I may have mentioned before that the mechanic has a couple of different experimental devices, like we have experimental weapon and experimental armor in character operations manual. Now we have the experimental vehicle, which allows you to create a custom whatever it is that you ride in from level one that upgrades as you gain levels. Or you can have an experimental explosives expert, which is somebody who has a box full of explosives that renews every day that you can use to create a variety of different detonatable delights. And we can kind of go into a little bit of what some of those are in a little bit once we get to gear. So either way, there's a ton of really cool stuff that presents not only these alternate class features, but also the smaller options that you're used to, like operative exploits or envoy improvisations. So even if you're not building a new character where you might be able to very cleanly bring on one of these alternate class features, there's still stuff for you to grab mid-game.
That sounds super cool. I'm really excited for that. Also, Junkrat the mechanic sounds great.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I guess before we leave the class option section, are there any archetypes in this book?
There are no archetypes in this book. There are a couple of concepts or rules mechanics that we did not have as much room to play around with here. So you might find like one or two feats in the book, but this is not really a book that has as much about feats or themes or archetypes, but it does expand on a huge variety of pretty much everything else.
Very cool. Tell us about something else.
I was going to say more sniper class options for operative at low levels is very helpful, because I've dashed many people's hopes in low level games. They're like, I'm going to do this, and it's like, you can, but it's not going to work as you think. I'm really sorry.
At level six, you will.
Or it's, yeah. It's like, how often do we have encounters where we're at least 500 feet away from the enemy? That happens a lot in Adventure Path, right?
Well, if you want to talk about Starfinder Society, there's one, and that one doesn't have a very high rating.
Probably because exactly that, and people are like, I can't believe that you put sniper things in here. How dare?
Because it's not a combat, it's a firing squad.
No, listen. Your plan in that scenario, James, to just send waves of Aeons for the sniper to deal with while you ran was great. It was wonderful. There was no problems.
I was one of the few groups I've ever heard that didn't just rage at it. So.
Yeah, we can only pull that sort of stuff off every once in a while.
That's fair.
But it gives good story, so, you know, I think it's worth it in the end.
Truly, it does. So I guess we talked about the class options in this book, and you mentioned that the book doesn't do archetypes and feats to focus more on these cool class concepts, and I'm assuming gear? Is that where we're going? We're talking about the tech next, right? The
action sure,
tech
yeah.
and the revolution. I mean, I know what you probably really want to talk about. Do you want to talk about that first? The thing that's on the cover that everybody wants to know about? Like, a chat is like, when are you going to talk about mechs? Come on, where are the mechs?
I'm pretty sure the chat is really excited to stick around for the entire show, aren't they?
Yeah, so let's talk about with the grenades first. Go ahead.
You got it. I know how this works. Yeah, so there's a ton of new gear in this. We have a plethora of new technological items, but we also have weapons, augmentations, new types of armor. Just to share a couple of the fun ones. We have a thing called the Programmer's Plushie, which is like a little plush animal or plush toy that you have that is mechanically trained to hone in on your emotional state. And anytime you seem to be depressed while you're hacking or using a computer, it basically gives you motivational speeches or sounds or execute to be like, you got it, buddy. And we have ordered some of the most adorable chibi art of a beloved or possibly infamous Pathfinder and Starfinder creature that I look forward to people bombarding our publisher about, like, when Ken has the plushie of this sorts of questions. Ones where, like, take a step back for a sec. When it comes to using Tech Revolution, one of the things that I really love about this book is that it opens up all sorts of new styles of play or expands on the options for styles of play that we've only been able to scratch the surface on. And one of my favorites is running heists. So I love technological gear that allows you to like hack into things or steal information, or in the case of the InfoSphere, that is INFAUX, InfoSphere. It is a device that you can set up in a place and it will broadcast a fake InfoSphere filled with any false data you want, that unless somebody beats a computer's check to bypass it, they accidentally log into that instead. So they'll be like, is there traffic on I-85? And you can be like, they've tapped into my account. And I say, yes, take this detour where we've set up an ambush sort of thing. So you can pull all sorts of weird tricks like that. So cool technological devices on that front. This has also been an opportunity for us to explore different mobility aids in our game. So we worked a lot with Sarah Thompson, who did a great deal of work on like 5th edition D&D battle wheelchair, which was talk of the town earlier this year.
Yeah,
and so she was able to write hover chairs for us, and we have several different varieties, as well as information for if you want to play a disabled character from the very beginning, how to adjudicate having one as part of your starting equipment as well, as opposed to like, haha, sucker, you have to pay 350 credits in order to have this.
Nice.
But on top of that, we have different varieties of things beyond just tech gear. We have my love when it comes to new gear is powered armor. I absolutely adore powered armor, and I love trying to get it to like click into my various character builds. And so we have some delightful new ones, including one called the Infiltration Skin. I've seen occasionally in like Discord or other online communities where people are like, when can we get smaller powered armor? And there's a medium-sized one, Infiltration Skin, which is designed for tiny and small users in order to basically sit in one and disguise yourself as a medium-sized person. It's developed by the Skridreeps from the Aslanti Star Empire to infiltrate the Aslanti inner circles. But yeah, it's a disguise powered armor. I find it absolutely delightful, along with other ones all the way from level 5 to 20. New augmentations, new weapons. If you've been following some of the Starfinder and online adventure folks on social media, you might have seen some references to one of their home games. They're already playing with a weapon called the Cordpocalypse, which is a sonic guitar that you can use to blast destructive energy at people. It has the boost property, so if you want to build up to one big power chord, you can. It has the, I think it's called the echo ability or resonant or whatever it is, where like it boosts the damage every time you hit somebody in the same round. So if you just want to like dragon force somebody with 100 notes all at once, it also reflects that. And it has the professional musician trait. So if you're a professional musician, you already have proficiency in this long arm. So go nuts. So lots of fun. Also, we have a whole variety of weapons that people have been asking about that we've never really had, namely submachine guns. So there's a variety of SMGs, which are small arms with the automatic property.
There we go.
Yeah, that was something that I'm forgetting we were speaking to, but that at the time it was a thing that's like, let's back off on this so we can figure out where this interacts with other stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
So tons of new gear. But on top of that, this is a chapter where we get to play with a couple of variations on existing systems. So the two big ones being demolitions and hacking. Hacking in the core rulebook is has some layers of complexity to it, but at the end of the day, it's very much a make computers check, say I'm in, done with encounter. So we have a system of hacking where it is much more like node-based, where you're doing several different rounds and adapting to new challenges as you go. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more competitive in that way. And then we also have a demolition system where you may have had the detonator in Starfinder Core Rulebook that allowed you to like attach grenades to something and be like, okay, blow up the grenade right now. Fantastic for anti-personnel stuff. Mm-hmm. But based on the hardness of objects and the number of hit points a wall has, you'd have to have like a level 20 grenade to start to break down even some relatively thin walls. So the damage to hardness thing was not quite intersecting. We have a new demolition system that allows you to do property damage more than personnel damage. And so when you're looking at your experimental demolitionist or experimental explosives mechanic, then these explosive charges are some of the things you can do. So if you just want to blow a hole in the wall and say, get wrecked, doors, you have that opportunity.
Oh, yeah. My God. I, Scott, at a Gen Con, got stopped for an hour because they figured out in an encounter that they could just close the bulkhead doors, and there's nothing any of the listed NPCs could do to get through those doors. They were impervious. That's awesome.
Amazing. I saw you, James, get like googly-eyed as soon as John started talking about that guitar. Mitsuki Hane?
No. Okay, this is going to be a terrible poll. I just love playing Squidbillies. And there's an episode where Rusty, the younger squid, gets a guitar and he sells a soul to the devil to become a rock star. And that's all I want to play now. I just want to play an Ijikri who sells a soul to the devil to become good at rock and, I guess, adventure. I think all Ijikris are Squidbillies, so I'm the terrible... I'm not a good representative of them. They're definitely do more.
That's fair.
I hope this gives you additional context to the Witch Warper character we talked about earlier that he played.
Just a little.
Speaking about getting additional context onto things, what else can you tell us about the cool tech coming in Tech Revolution? You talked about weapons, powered armor, I assume general tech equipment. Does this book have personal gear, or is that a little too low tech for this book?
It doesn't really have personal gear, although some of the tech items could approach that thematically. Mm-hmm. So future content, we focus on the things that go burr the loudest.
Yeah, that's fair. More DACA.
Listen, mm-hmm. you gotta. Speaking about things that are the loudest, a couple of people in chat have asked whether Tech Revolution is going to have content for starships or whether that's mostly handled by Starship Operations Manual.
That is mostly handled by Starship Operations Manual. We have two really big tools that we worked with in Tech Revolution, vehicles and mechs. We figured starships have had some fun time to shine. Let's give them a little bit of rest while we explore other topics.
Well, we have two topics, and we know that the fans want to hear about mechs, so tell me more about vehicles.
Yeah, you got it. So vehicles showed up all the way in the core rulebook, and they got like two pages of vehicle options, and then admittedly like how to run chases, how to do the one action that anybody ever does with vehicles, which is ram.
Yeah. So,
I've played a vehicle non-expert. I know exactly what happened whenever we found vehicles. We drove them into things. So, and then Armory expanded on the options for vehicles further with about like 6 or 8 pages of more vehicles. But one of the really big challenges with vehicles is that they have numbers that are based very much on their item level. And after a few levels, suddenly they are no longer really competitive with anything else you're fighting or finding. So the exploration buggy you loved at level 1 that was adequate at level 3 is like just, it's 20 hit points. It is, it's waiting to get blown up by level 8 when everything is doing 20 points of damage.
It's anyway. Like a Barbie so, Power Wheels.
Exactly. And it's not nearly fast enough. Like, so it's like, how can we make this exploration buggy that we love and hold dear stay as part of our team, the fifth member of our intrepid crew all the way until we retire after finishing like Dead Sons, for example. Mm-hmm. And so we took several approaches to this. One of them is that we wanted to make sure that there were rules for improving and modifying vehicles. So the improvements is, here's my exploration buggy. We pile a bunch of credits toward the local mechanic and we say, make it good. And the mechanic says, you got it, boss. It's now level 4 exploration buggy. Here are the stat upgrades it gets so that it is in line with a 4th level vehicle. Awesome. But also hey, boss, we really want to have some modifications on this thing. Like, we thought it'd be cool if it had a grapple gun so we could, like, cruise along Mad Max style and start to jump on other people's trucks. Cool. Every vehicle now has one or more modification slots, even if it was published before this book. Mm. And you can use those to install heavier armor or faster engines, grapple guns, shock tires, scythe wheels, et cetera, to personalize your ride and turn it into whatever sort of cool, fast, vindictive monstrosity it is that you want it to be. So those are two cool approaches that are kind of go together. The other one is, like, even at this point, including all the Adventure Path back matter, maybe we have 40 or 50 vehicles across 20 levels. That's cool, but, like, that means that we have maybe two submarines at all. Maybe you just want to create exactly the vehicle you want because you haven't seen it published yet. Maybe you need custom vehicle rules. So we have those now. Hooray! You can say, I want a level 7 vehicle, and I'm willing to pay roughly this much, and it'll say, awesome, here are the stats. Here are some of the choices that you can make about the shape it is. Do you want a boat? Do you want a truck? Do you want a walker type thing? Do you want a plane? All these are options, and they will change, like, what your hardness or hit points or speed stuff is. Is it factory built? Is it custom? Is it an unstable prototype? Did you make it out of junk? These are different things that will, again, modify your stats and also modify the price that you're paying. But it allows you to build it from the ground up. And these are the rules that contribute to that that experimental vehicle mechanic as well. So they're just, nice. They're using this section of the book very much. The only way we're possibly able to fit an experimental vehicle mechanic in this in the first place.
I think that's great. Dustin Knight in chat already asked me if I can upgrade their hover bikes they're in Teenage Wasteland. You're going to have to do that yourself, Dustin. I'm not going to upgrade your bikes for you. Go get money and do jobs and be working, you know, people. You know, you're a teenager. Go get a job.
Get good, Dustin. Come on.
Seriously. James, I know that you said there was something you really wanted to ask.
Not me. There was a question in chat, though.
Oh.
About construct creature companions. Would that be something that might be in this book or another book or as an idea?
So there are not construct creature companions, like using the Alien Archive 3 rules in this one. Although, you know, it is certainly possible using the existing examples we have to create some suitable construct creature companions. I think so far we have not published any of those, in part because we only have so many creature companion options so far anyway. Mm-hmm. But also because that's partly the domain of the drone mechanic. Mm-hmm. On the plus side, even though we don't have construct creature companions here, what we do have is a doubling of the number of drone chassis that we start off with in the core rulebook. So you're not just limited to the stealth, combat, and hover drones. You now have artillery, protocol, and sage as well.
I don't know what artillery does, but I want it. Tell me
more.
I mean, it starts with, like, Each one of these starts with, you know, two drone mods.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it spends all of its drone mods on weapon arms and heavy weapon proficiency. So it's like, does your drone have any skills? No, but I put a cannon on it.
I want my drone just to sit back and support me with mortar fire. That's all I ask. I'm a simple man who loves ordnance and small robots.
Just you have a drone that follows you around, and, like, anytime it's getting slow in a conversation, it just reloads. And you're like, no.
Exactly. That's your out when the diplomacy situation goes bad.
Wait, so are you telling me that Sage is like Alexa is my drone companion?
Yeah, but if it were cat-sized.
I mean, I don't see a problem. Like, you're just adding on the good, right? Now I've got a cat named Alexa who, Alexa, what's that on the infosphere? Oh, I forgot to install the mod that lets it speak in a communicable language.
I swear, Judge, I'm not a cat.
Oh, that's so good. All right. So we've already had one person say that they were going to take a contract out on us if we didn't ask you about mechs. So I think we're at the point now where this is getting serious, John. What else can you tell us about Tech Revolution that isn't mechs?
So we have the setting chapter at the end. This is on you at this point. Yeah, I've done my trolling.
Yeah, no, you've already told us about the setting chapter at the start of the interview. Let's go on to mechs before I legitimately get attacked.
Fair enough. So mechs. So we, in addition to playtesting the Nanocyte, we playtested mechs. Mechs were a system that Amanda Hammond and I wrote together. And basically we were, just like the Nanites are trying to do everything in sci-fi, there are so many mech subgenres that we knew the pressure was going to be on to fulfill as many of them as possible. Mm-hmm. And we have fulfilled as many of them as possible without becoming absurdly complex. So the mech combat has several really big goals. One, it needs to be easy to use. And in fact, it uses all the combat rules you already know. It uses squares, it uses ranges, it uses the standard attack rolls, ACs. It coordinates or it integrates well with the existing creatures that we have. So if you want to use a mech to fight anything in the alien archives or any NPCs, you totally can. You don't need to like convert them on the fly or anything like that. Also, we wanted to make sure that we enabled individual mechs and multi-pilot mechs, which we do have. Mechs range from size huge to colossal. And once you get to the bigger ones, you should be using more pilots. But they also are fully scalable from level 1 to 20. Giving you roughly a 3-level power boost. So a level 4 party in a mech should feel roughly level 7 for what you can take on. Wow. And mechs have like all these different weapons, like a lot of them which attack areas. They're very much a power trip in a can. So the times that I've seen them most successfully used or most fulfillingly used tended to be against like R2 mechs against 8 bad guys. That way we have, you know, 3 of them that we can catch in the flamethrower, or like we can stab the spear in a line attack through 2 of them, or stuff like that. But yeah, they're really designed to feel powerful. And in the grand scheme of things, they absolutely do. We have the mech system that you're going to see in Tech Revolution is fairly similar to that which we showed in the playtest. We have definitely made some usability changes in terms of building process goes. For example, the mech math that we published in the playtest had like some multiply by this fraction or improper number sort of thing, which was a little heavy for some people, especially when we have, you know, several pages of like how to customize and design the mech. So we have replaced a bunch of that with tables. So that way you can just say, it's a tier 5 mech, read across the line, done. So it's made it a lot more easy to just sort of point and click, kind of like Alien Archive creature creation goes.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So we've simplified those things. But as far as a lot of the mechanics of how they work, like how multiple pilots add multiple actions, or like the general damage values or some of the overall numbers go, you're going to see some very similar stuff for mechs. Just finely polished and taking your feedback into account to clean things up wherever we can.
You took my feedback.
I mean, so part of what I hope it is what was that Pathfinder Society scenario that may or may not have that?
It's the one where they attack Absalom, Siege of Absalom.
Yeah.
There was another one that also
John developed that one.
Yeah, there's either I want kind of that experience. And it seems like, especially the 3-level boost, Starfinder, that matters a lot. 3 levels is a lot in Starfinder. Mm.
Couple questions from chat about mechs. Number one, is there going to be any class interfacing with mechs? The one that was brought up initially was nanocytes, like your nanites going into the mech.
So we had a couple of class options that appeared earlier in the book that integrated with mechs a little bit. Some of those have been able to survive the copy fitting process as we get all of our cool options to fit on a page. But by and large, our goal with mechs is to make them as universally usable as possible. That way you don't have to build a mech pilot to feel good in a mech. If you're Mystic, you know, if the GM throws a mech into an encounter that you guys can steal and use on the fly, the Mystic will feel good about it. Pardon me, the operative will feel good, the soldier will feel good. And some of them might be a little bit better at it than others, but they're all going to be in roughly the same power band. That way you don't feel worse about getting into a mech than if you had just stayed on foot. That would be a very disappointing play experience, and we've designed against that sort of thing. Future content, mechs certainly open themselves up for all sorts of wild new possibilities. So there's definitely room for us to creating new weapons, new expansion, not expansion bays, but auxiliary units, for us to create new like soldier abilities that are like mech champion, where you get plus one to mechs or whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. But at this point, mechs are available to everybody on roughly even footing.
Very cool. Dustin wants to know, what's the power level of mechs? Can I use a mech to destroy a moon? I'm going to answer that question for you, Dustin. It'll destroy the moon if I say it'll destroy the moon.
I think that destroying a moon with a mech sounds like the sort of thing that might be possible if you spent the dang credits to upgrade your inner cycle, Dustin.
There you go. He's spoken. More questions from chat. Let's see. What do the Starfinder Society's mechs look like?
So we have a whole bunch. Just like I was saying that the nanocyte was one of those challenges to us developers to be like, oh yeah, what does the nanocyte look like? We had the same question from our team about like, what do mechs? And we're like, okay, so we want to make sure that we're fulfilling a lot of different subgenres here. But we also want to make sure that we are creating these iconically awesome looking mechs that we can play with. And so we explored, gosh, about a dozen different cultures and groups that use mechs on some regular basis, and creating special looks for each one of them. I think, I don't know if you've shown some art yet so far of...
No, let's show that art now.
Sweet.
We've got special preview art just for you people watching live, not No Direction Beyond. Everybody else, be super jealous.
Oh, dang. Let's see, which one have you pulled up so far?
It looks like right now we have the awesome looking green one and the awesome looking yellow gold one. I don't know if I see a name there on these. At least I don't see one immediately.
They're not named here, but if you read some of the small text that we have printed on them, it'll start to explain them, as well as we have one page entries for a bunch of different categories of pre-built mechs and what some of the mech setting information is for, like, where do these mechs come from, or what are these designed for? So the two that we're looking at right now are some for the Aslanti Star Empire, as well as for Abadar Corps. The Aslanti Star Empire ones very much play to our science fantasy element, where they are basically pulling upon that Aeon Stone style technology to drive their power core. And these mechs have the ability to drain spells from their pilots in order to gain temporary bonuses. So there are options in some of the mechs to basically say, I mean, I cast magic, don't I? What spells can I use to enhance the mech? Just like pour magic into it. It'll go fast. But also we have the Abadar Corps ones, which are, you know, sold widely to whoever has the money for them. But you'll see a whole bunch of like different heads toward the top, or you'll see some different types of arms in that box on one corner. One of the things about Abadar Corp mechs is that they are super customizable. So they will sell them to you with whatever attachments you want. So every one of these spreads that we have of new mech art, we have a whole bunch of fun little in-world captions explaining what some of the setting lore is of them, or why certain things look the way they do. And a member of our team, a concept artist, Kent Hamilton, did the vast majority of this mech art. And basically he would send us updates every couple of weeks and be like, how about this? Or I'm thinking about that one. We all go, oh my gosh, everything is great. More of this, more of that. And it was a delightful creative process to be collaborating to create these unique visuals for each one of these types of mechs. I think you have one other image that we provided on the mech front.
We do.
Some of the weirder variety that we have. Because when we were like, what does the Corpse Fleet's mechs look like? And a couple of other varieties, we were like, let's just make them weird. Like,
yeah,
let's step away from the biped dynamic and just, Kent, make us something spoopy. here are some pictures of the Corpse Fleet ships. That's all we're giving you. Make it a battle robot. And so we have like this centipede-like creature that still has a whole bunch of like the mech mechanics going on, but just looks creepy as you see it skittering towards you, and with the understanding that this thing is like five times the size of a semi-truck. Or we have the Dimalkin mechs, the Valkos, over on the other side, which are like purposefully spiky because they are fighting giant beasts that want to bite them. So spikes are good for keeping those creatures away from you. But yeah, so we have in Tech Revolution, we have, I think it's two more two-page spreads like this, as well as probably about another dozen or so mech illustrations throughout the chapter, just showing a huge variety of what's possible.
So I think it's pretty safe to say that these rules were playtested in-house, right, before they went out. Tell me about the mech that you made with these rules.
Oh, gosh. So I was GMing these playtests when I was running them, even before we released the playtest rules, just to be like, to sanity check things. So I believe we ended up going up against a bunch of Yosoki run mechs that the players were fighting up against. When I was doing these encounters, I was primarily doing one or two mechs plus a bunch of ground troops, because I wanted to see what a combined arms encounter would look like. And the players had a delightful time mowing through all of these very plucky Yosoki adventurers who were after them. I don't think I actually played anything that was not a Yosoki mech in my playtest, partly because I'm a cruel, terrible person, and half of the playtest fun was seeing how to what depths my players would sink in their pursuit of carnage.
I bet the answer was would not have surprised you.
No, actually, I did run some Hell Knights as well.
Ah, there we go. There we go. Well, I'm out of questions, James. Do you have anything you want to ask, John?
No, that was a pretty good overview. I'm super excited.
Yeah, I'm so pumped for this book. We do have a couple people in chat that have different versions of the same question. They are asking about, it sounds like there's a little bit of like apprehension, like how much am I going to destroy Dead Sons if I drop mechs into it?
So mechs are designed to be used in a wide variety of frequencies and contexts. So if you want to build a mech style campaign where you are spending like half of your time in mechs or more, you can totally do that. And you just design your encounters to be a little bit higher difficulty to account for that. But mechs are also fantastic to just sprinkle in every once in a while to really highlight a set piece encounter, especially where you already know that there's some sort of otherwise insurmountable foe that the PCs couldn't face down. So if we were doing something on Daimalco, going up against a Kyokor, one of the giant not Godzilla creatures, is out of the question. But you could drop a really high tier mech as like some sort of thing that like your team just uncovered. And now you can hop in and use it for this one encounter to save an entire settlement. And because again, everything's using the combat rules that you already know, with a few more little options, like the ability to pick up and hurl vehicles at each other, then it should be fairly intuitive to pick up and run. So less of a learning curve than Starship Combat.
Excellent. Speaking of Starship Combat, we have a couple of people that are asking whether any
mechanics... I think I know the question.
Yeah, they want to know if use BP to upgrade these things.
Oh, not the question I was expecting. No, you do not use BP to upgrade these, but just like how BP is in... It's kind of a flexible currency in world where it's like, hey, we gained a level. Hey, look, we have extra BP to upgrade our starship. It did not cost us credits. The same thing is implicitly true for gaining mech points to upgrade your mechs. If you as a GM want to turn this into something where there is more of a cost, or that gaining mech points or build points or whatever is a part of your reward structure, fantastic. But at its core, the mech system assumes an existing just jump up in the number of mech points that you have. Mm-hmm. You don't have to explicitly hunt them.
Let me ask the question that I assume you thought that we were going to be asking. Can you use a mech to fight a starship class creature?
Not at this time, no. So
that was not a hard no, though.
There are always opportunities to expand on these rules. And if I look at Pathfinder First Edition as inspiration, there were tons of subsystems tossed out there. Some of which the fans absolutely adored and like used a lot, and they're like, we want more stuff for this, and we provided that. Mechs is something where if we see that there's tons of interest once the rules are out in the wild, and that's totally possible for us to include more of them in adventures or to include more options in future books, like let us know if this is something you want more of. And it's possible, albeit it would be complex, but it would be possible to create a variant where you could convert your mech stats into starship stats to do Space Gundam battles against starships and punch holes through juggernauts, etc. But at launch, not so much.
So what you're saying is that if our fans get like super vocal and like sing the praises of Mechs to you, the Star Chamber at Paizo, we could very well be looking at a future that in like 2023, it might not be Tech Revolution anymore. It might be Mech Revolution.
It could be Mech Revolution. So, I mean, you got to keep in mind that the praises that sing loudest are the ones that ensure that we know that we're selling these books well. So if the people want to get their hands on a copy of Tech Revolution, there's still time to set up a subscription to the Starfinder hardcover book line. Keep in mind that the subscriptions are like a great way to get the PDFs in addition to the physical books. And there's still time to grab yours so that you can have yours by the end of August.
You can do it. You haven't run out of time yet. I think even your marketing leads do a really good job of updating like when that cutoff is and like, hey, you can still get it. Get all the prizes, subscribe. You can do it. And yeah. I think, and the Starfinder line is really great because like, you know, the line is, it's not like when I do the APs and it's like every month, here's a book. Oh man, my wallet, here's my book. Like, this is like, you know, you just get like a couple a year and you're like, all right, I got these great books, all the content I could want. Of course you should be me and just buy everything because the AP content has been getting really good with all the player options they put into it lately. But I'm saying, if that's not you, just get subscribed to this line, you know, it's fine. You got it.
Yeah, so like sort of in summary, like Tech Revolution is going to be really fun just because of all the different styles of play that's really opening up. If the types of adventures that you now can be running, whether it is a like pop culture centric sort of thing, because we have all this setting lore about media and the flow of technology or flow of information, whether you want to do like a warfare campaign with mechs and vehicles, mm-hmm. whether you want to run a heist thing with demolitions and hacking and vehicles, security lore, there are like all sorts of new companies that are listed as like things that you could potentially knock over or steal data from or whatever. Just tons of different ways that you can add all sorts of great energy and technology into your Starfinder campaign. So really excited to see what this book is like once it's in the wild.
I'm excited too. All right. So John, I know that you're all over the internet, but if our fans want to find you online, where can they go?
So they can find me on Twitter at Archaeotag. That's ArchaeotaGh. I also spend a good amount of time on the Starfinder and Pathfinder RPG Discord chat or servers, where Pathfinder, I'm typically in the Pathfinder lore, Starfinder, I'm all over the place. Otherwise, you can find me on the Paizo.com message boards, and yeah, always creating new stuff.
Excellent. James, do we have anything that we want to shout out to?
No, I don't have anything.
I want to shout out Tech Revolution. Since somebody asked in chat, Tech Revolution should be out at the start of September. I think it's shipping the end of August, you said, right?
Yeah, I see August 25 in my blurb from teammates.
Very nice. All right. Well, we hope that everybody has enjoyed this preview of Tech Revolution, the upcoming Starfinder hardback, and that looks like it's really going to revolutionize how this game is going to be played. Looking really excited and really looking forward to it. And until next time, go beyond with no direction.